This series of Kicking It Off is sponsored by Bazooka Goals, Air Pitch, and 3v3 UK. Having been a coach for over three decades, I know how important it is to have equipment that's easy to use and immediately engages the players. Bazooka Goals is the award-winning pop-up goal that's the perfect partner for small-sided games and training. Remember, every dream starts with a goal. And if you want to take your games to the next level, Air Pitch's unique system keeps the ball in play 95% of the time. And coaches, if you're like me and want to bring the best of football, futsal and street football together, then 3v3 UK hosts tournaments and festivals around the country, as well as having a great franchise program. It's all about fast feed fun. All three of these brands will help you create a fun-filled, vibrant environment in which to produce the happy, active, skillful players of the future.
And welcome to Kicking It Off, the podcast series for those interested in sports, football, and the coaching of young children. We have a fantastic conversation to share with you today. Our guest, currently foundation phase lead at Arsenal's Academy, their whole career has been a really exciting one, full of the desire to learn and to grow, whilst never losing sight of the importance of putting the child first. So without further ado, let's head on over to our virtual studio as we kick off this conversation with the brilliant Lewis Gota. And now I'm sure that many of the coaches listening are going to know about you, Lewis, but for those that might not, are you able to just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into coaching and where that journey has taken you so far?
Yeah. So firstly, thank you for inviting me onto the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this opportunity to discuss things all foundation phase. Yeah. So my journey, I'll talk about where I first started. I first started probably like most coaches, coaching at my local junior football club, which was Winchester Junior Football Club. So I started off coaching there. And then I got into coaching. I was lucky enough to work at two of the sort of more well-known coaching franchises back in the day, which were Curva Coaching and Football de Salio, which I'm sure I know Pete was, you were involved in as well. So I worked for them for a couple of years. And then I first started coaching in academy football. It was going back probably, I think it was the season 2007-2008 is when I first started coaching in academy football. And I was lucky enough to get an opportunity to coach at Reading Academy. So I spent 2 years working as an assistant coach within the under-10s and the under-11s age groups. And then around 2010, which is when the EPPP was formed from the Premier League. One of their conditions in terms of becoming a Category 1 academy, there was a big revolution in terms of academy systems with the Premier League back then. And one of the remits to be a Category 1 academy is you needed phase leads. Prior to that, it was more sort of directors of youth or youth directors, which was good for me. It was good timing for me because that allowed me to have an opportunity to work full time, which probably wouldn't have happened if the EPPP didn't come in. So I started coaching. I got my first full time role as the lead foundation phase coach at Reading Academy in 2010. And that was a big remit because that was not only overseeing the foundation phase, but also the pre-academy, which is under sixes to under eights, and also overseeing the development centre programme, which we had in Swindon and Oxford. So I spent just over 10 years at Reading and I had a wonderful time and lots of opportunity to learn from some really good youth developers. When I look back and reflect back on my time, people like Eamon Dolan, God bless him, and David Dodds and Martin Dean and Lee Heron, I learned a lot from some really good people. And then in 2019, I had an amazing opportunity to leave Reading, as sad as it was, but I felt that I did need that new challenge personally. And the opportunity to work with Per Mertesacker at Arsenal in terms of the academy in 2019, and a similar role there. So I've been the lead foundation phase coach for just over 5 years now. So I oversee the football development program for ages under 9s to under 11s, but I'm also the under 11s head coach. So yeah, it's an amazing opportunity and a privilege to work at such a an amazing football club with great history, but also really privileged and lucky to work with some amazing children and their families as well. So yeah, that's my journey so far.
It sounds like, I mean, people say to me, how did you get to where you got to? And it's like an overnight success takes about 25, 30 years in my case. And I think what you've described, Lewis, is that you do really have to put the hours in, show the commitment, show the desire to really develop yourself and develop your knowledge. And then opportunities hopefully will come along where you can begin to apply that.
Yeah, I agree, Pete. I've always looked at my role in terms of, you know, ultimately the essence of my role is coaching children to learn how to play football. That's it in a nutshell, really. So I've always been really conscious for myself to, you know, not only know about coaching and development, but also as well, how much do I know about children and child development? How much do I know about teaching and learning and skill acquisition? How much do I know about play and the benefits of learning through play? And ultimately, how much do I know about football as well? So I've always been conscious of, you know, I feel the best way to develop the players that you're working with is to develop yourself, and not only developing your knowledge, as much knowledge and as a broad knowledge, but also gaining that experience as well. And experience isn't just the coaching, being on the pitch, but that's experience with dealing with parents, or managing parents or working with parents. That's also experiences working with coaches, working with children, working in different scenarios on and off the pitch as well. So, yeah, I've always felt that my role is to work with children. It's, you know, how much can you develop your knowledge and experience as well.
And so did you know that from the beginning of your coaching journey that you wanted to work with younger years? And did you notice quite early on there was a specific age group that you seem to really enjoy working with more than others? How did you come to coaching foundation phase players?
Oh, good question, Lauren. I think there's an intrinsic motivation from me to work with children. I remember when I was that sort of age when you are finishing your GCSEs and you don't quite know what you want to do. I knew I wanted to work in football, but I really knew that I wanted to work with children. And I think if I didn't work in football as a football coach, I think I still would have worked with children, whatever that would have been, whether that would have been a primary school teacher or I don't know. So I've always had that desire to work and to work with children. And I think, yeah, as I started my coaching journey, I just sort of felt this feels right. I really enjoy engaging with children and working with children. And I think that's important. If you are going to work in the foundation phase, you've really got to have that passion and enthusiasm to really work with children, because that's, you're working with children before football players. It just so happens that they've chosen football as their activity. So, and yeah, I think I was quite lucky in terms of the landscape was changing in youth development. And I know Pete will certainly know more than me, but when I first started coaching, there wasn't many opportunities. And I don't think the foundation phase was seen as a special to be specialised in. But I think with the introduction of the EPPP and it making football more age specific, and I would say as well, and I'm going to embarrass you here, Pete, but I think the FA Youth Awards and the youth modules And the England DNA, and the especially the foundation phase DNA, really came at a good time. And it made me feel a little bit more, you know what, this is a profession to be taken seriously, and you can be seen and recognised as a specialist working with children in, within the foundation phase.
I think, and I know your work, and I think you've been part of that transformation. I think in the past, players in the foundation phase weren't recruited into the old Centre of Excellence schemes. They were a little bit later. And then when clubs started recruiting earlier and earlier, my biggest fear was that they knew football really, really well, but they weren't really specialists with children of this young age. And I think what you've done is help raise the profile of people who work within the foundation phase, knowing that, or seeing the role not as a stepping stone, as actually probably an opportunity to do the most important job that you could ever do. And that's how I've always looked at it. And I've always had that same feeling about you. And when we've had our chats, you've always had that same kind of motivation that it's almost children first. And if we get that bit right, the football bit becomes so much easier. And what you said about teaching and learning and child development, I think it all fits into that. And one of the most pleasing things at the moment is that I think when I look at the academy systems now, the expertise in the foundation phase and pre-academy is way, way better than it was in the past. And I just hope that continues.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there, Pete. You know, when I look back 10 years to now, the game and in terms of the foundation phase, we've come a long way. However, I do feel that we can develop better, and we can continue to evolve and improve what we're doing across the landscape. But the main thing is now there's more conscious, you know, in terms of the specialist within the phase and what that looks like, and what does, because the what of football is the same for everybody, but the application is different whether you're working with children, with adults, you know, but the application is what we've got to get right in terms of making it child friendly.
And so I know that when you were at Reading, that you were obviously the guy who was creating their specific foundation phase. And am I right in thinking it was Me and My Ball was the program that you devised at Reading? Have I got that right?
Yeah, you have. Yeah, that's correct.
And so I was just wondering if you could possibly, I think it would be really great for the listeners and for coaches and for parents around to hear what was your inspiration and what were you drawing on when you created that program, and your priorities again about how did you focus on the child first and then possibly whatever activity they choose. Obviously, we're kind of football centric, but what were your influences in creating that program, and then possibly how has that changed as your journey as a coach has just grown and developed?
Yeah, good. Again, another really good question, Lauren. I think the Me and My Ball was an accumulation of all of the resources and references and knowledge that I was gaining at that time. So if you talk about coaching, I've already mentioned the youth awards and the youth modules, module 1, 2, and 3, which was focusing on developing the player or the children and developing the environment. And I think the third one was it developing the practice, Pete?
Yeah.
And that was really useful for me because it was kind of the first content, child-specific content. And when I look back to kind of the Future Game document as well that came out, Pete, as well, it was the first time that I saw kind of age-related and specific practices. So I think that was a big influence on me in terms of seeing possession as an individual event first, and really linking into the children's development in terms of quite they're quite egotistic in terms of it's them and the ball, and how do we develop that and build in a really solid foundation, technical foundation of players being able to stay on the ball. And obviously that linked into the FA DNA key messages, which were master the ball, stay on the ball. Also as well, I think I remember getting a book a book from Horst Vane, who I'm sure Pete will be aware of. And it was a book called Game Intelligence. And I got this book and I was expecting to see all these, you know, fancy drills and activities, but it was actually a book full of small-sided games, 2v2s, 3v3s. And it was really resonated with me. I thought, wow, this is, you can coach this to children. It doesn't have to all be drills and activities. They can learn through play. So that was, I think his program was it Fanino, Pete?
Fanino, yeah.
And that was a really good resource for me. And ironically, I actually think they're using Horst Vane's work with the DFB, the German FA now. So I think it's gone full circle. And Horst Vane was doing this almost probably about 20, 30 years ago. So they were the influences on me. And also as well, I would say that at that time was when Barcelona were at their dominance. And it was that tiki-taka style of football. But I was just mesmerised with Messi. And I just thought to myself, if Messi's the best player that's probably ever been on the planet, you know, we can argue there was maybe other players, Maradona, Pele and George Best as well, or Cristiano Ronaldo. But for me, in terms of my lifetime, you know, Messi's the best and most creative player that's ever been on the planet. I kind of thought, well, I should try not to steer too far away in terms of Messi and his actions. And, you know, I'd done a lot of looking on YouTube of what he was like when he was a child and just thought, you know what, let's keep that bar high and let's try and replicate that if we can with our children and our young players in the foundation phase.
Yeah, there's lots of urban myths around Messi's like formative years. And if one of them is his coach, that if Messi ever lost the ball when he was on a dribble, he would stop the game and give him the ball back so that he could have another go. And yet our approach in this country, I had so many emails from coaches when we were trying to implement the DNA that says, I've got a dribbler. I'm going to put him on one touch because I want him to learn how to pass. And my immediate response was, if he's a dribbler, you've got to feed the greed. And I know it sounds a bit of a bad statement, but if they are really intent on getting better at doing something themselves on the ball, feed that as much as you can to try to really hone it. And then the decision-making aspect of that can come a little bit later. But we immediately wanted to say, no, I'm going to stop you doing that. So I'll never know how good you could ever be at doing that. And I'm going to get you to do something that you don't want to do and probably doesn't fit with where you are developmentally. So, you know, I think the things that you've talked about and the thing that are obviously important to me have really tried to push back against that kind of approach.
Yeah, and it's difficult. And when I first started implementing this methodology, you know, it's difficult to get buy-in from not only the coaches, but also parents, because parents have this perception of what football looks like. And I think sometimes they see on Match of the Day the kind of pass and move football, and they expect to see that with their children. And why wouldn't they? Because they don't have the reference that we have. So I really found the challenges that I had was not so much the coaches, because we had coaches that believed in the methodology and the process, but you know, working with parents and communicating this message to parents is the challenge, and still is today. Even with Arsenal, we still have got that ethos of, you know, our head of coaching Luke Hobbs has given us the mission of trying to, if every player can master the ball, then all of our teams can dominate possession. So that's still very much that ethos is what we're trying to do at Arsenal.
And so how have things changed then, if anything has changed, from your move from Reading to then Arsenal? And you've arguably moved up in the rankings just in terms of where they are in their own personal leagues. And so from your programme, Me and My Ball, and then your work moving to Arsenal, was there anything that you had to compromise, or was there anything new that you could implement working at a slightly larger club?
I think I'm going to try and answer this as best as possible. I think my time at Reading was almost a trial and error period, which sounds mad that 11 years and it was trial and error. But on reflection, when I reflect on my time at Reading, it was probably, I would say there was competence, probably without comprehension, maybe, in terms of me and delivering the program. What I've found since I've been at Arsenal, and this is just me personally on my evolution as a coach, I've probably become more competent with comprehension. And what I mean by that is I probably know the what in terms of what the program is and how we coach the players. And I think that's been more underpinned by more knowledge. And what I mean by that is I probably have now more references and knowledge in terms of skill acquisition. There's a lot of research at the moment in terms of ecological dynamic systems, which can sound, for a coach, it's, you know, quite a big word. But when you do the research and you read a lot of research in terms of how skill is acquired from the younger years. So I think I have more references in my brain, which now helps me apply better. So the application in terms of the coaching, I think I'm in a really good place, but it's taken me 15 years to get there through trial and error. So you talk about me and my ball. When I reflect back at Reading critically, it probably, me and my ball, or staying on the ball, was the objective in itself. And when I reflect back, did we really develop the individual decision-making and game insight? Probably not. Whereas where I look at the program now, I think the objective in itself is to try and progress the ball to score a goal. So the focus, the intentions of the players is always to try and score a goal or play forward. But what I think now is I've got a better understanding of where that staying on the ball and manipulating the ball comes into play. So, and again, bear with me on this one because it's quite important to try and land the message. But I think children naturally, in the game of football, the intention is to try and progress the ball to attack the goal and score. That's what children or anyone's trying to do. But obviously, you've got defenders trying to stop you doing that. So if players can't pass or shoot, which should be their first intention, there's going to be moments or glimpses in the game where they can't quite pass or shoot. So if they can't pass or shoot to a teammate because there's no supporting option, and anybody who watches a lot of foundation phase football will understand what I'm explaining here, what will happen? They won't have an option to pass or shoot. So they're going to have to stay on the ball. And if they're going to have to stay on the ball, they're going to have to, one, be able to manipulate the ball with their feet, and they're also going to have to protect the ball with their arms and hide the ball. So in my logical thinking, that's how I see the whole sort of me and my ball, staying on the ball, progressing the ball. I think there's more clarity and logical explanation to that. Whereas when I reflect back at Reading and where I was with my development, me and my ball and staying on the ball became the objective in itself. And we probably didn't develop that decision-making element as much as probably we could have. I know there's a lot there, Pete. Sorry.
No, it's perfect, because I think I went through the same kind of thought processes, certainly with the foundation phase DNA, because I wanted a headline that really made people open up and discuss things. So the stay on the ball was the hook to get people saying, well, surely it means this, it means that. And so once we got people engaging with the fact that staying on the ball could be a really good thing for young players, then you can get into, when you're staying on the ball, there is still a lot of decision-making taking place, because from an individual point of view, I'm staying on it to either travel into a space, dribble against an opponent, turn this way, turn that way, shield it this way. So there are lots of individual decisions, but there are also decisions that involve a teammate or another teammate. And those are your passing, your shooting, your, you know, when you're, it becomes about more than you. But the thing that got us discussing all of these things and gave us a chance to clarify it was the fact that we said, We want the players to stay on the ball. And that was almost the bait that we threw out there. But one of the most important things about that message was the fact that we wanted players to understand when was the best time to share it. So it was we never neglected the importance of passing. But we said, let's take the children on a logical journey through this so that they feel great on the ball first, and then they'll be ready to say, look, we can do something really effective together. And it was almost like a step by step. But the whole thing that started it off was this phrase, get them staying on the ball for longer.
Summed it up very well, Pete.
So I feel in what you've both said there, we've kind of hinted at and we've talked about these moments of individual development and these individual moments of being allowed to stay on the ball and then figuring out confidence and competency in their own ability in what that means in a slightly larger format then. So how have you found that as a coach? How did you get that balance then between that individual development of your players and then moving that to smaller number or smaller team development? Was that a difficult balance, or did it all kind of complement one another in your process?
Yeah, that's the conundrum we have as foundation phase coaches, isn't it, Pete? How much do you balance developing the individual and also developing your team as well? Because, you know, we can't move away from the fact that football is a team sport, isn't it? So we can't neglect that. And especially for coaches who are, you know, if there's any grassroots coaches that are listening, you know, that's your, if you're taking the under nines in your local team, you know, your main focus is, you know, is going to be on your team, isn't it? But we also have that duty of care to develop the individual player as well, especially at the foundation phase. So we're quite lucky. We have one of our pillars at the academy is to develop effective team players, which I really like that wording, because the effective team player element, because that's ultimately what we want them to be, is really good team players. But obviously at the foundation phase, there's probably more of a focus on developing effective players. So to try and answer your question in terms of how you get that, how, and this is only my application in terms of how I do it and the methodology that we have implemented at Arsenal. Again, my context is different. I'm very lucky that we get to work with the players three evenings a week for 2 hours. So how I chop that up and get that balance of individual development and team development, I'm you know, it's almost utopia, really. So I do appreciate that if anyone was listening and only has a group of children for an hour, it may be difficult, but hopefully I can maybe give some advice on that or examples. But at Arsenal, we break down the coaching methodology in terms of, on a Monday, there would be a real focus on developing the player's actions and developing his technique. So the decision-making element will be very complex, because it could range from technical practice with a ball each, 1v1s, 2v2s, and very rarely nothing more than a 3v3. And this is from under nines to under 11s. So on a Monday, they're getting lots of individual actions. They're getting probably more focus as a coach, focusing on the player on the ball. And there's probably more of a internal focus of attention, and quite narrow. And what I mean by that is more on the player's body. So using his arm to protect and shield the ball. On a Wednesday is now we're developing the players' interactions or the player's decision-making. So the areas will become a little bit, will become bigger. So decision making will become more complex because there'll be more players. So we'll probably play more 4v4 to 7v7 games. And there'll probably be a wider focus of attention, because players will need to search and exploit gaps in space. There'll also be a focus on not only the player on the ball, but the players around and supporting the player on the ball. So that will be a Wednesday. And then on a Friday is almost team tactical focus. And when I say tactics, I don't want Pete to start worrying that it's, you know, the latest building up in a three and a two and inverting your fullback inside the pitch. That's not the case at this age. What I mean by developing tactics is very simple principles of play. So it's now the individual's actions linked to how we're going to play as a team. So how are we going to build up? How are we going to create? How are we going to score? And very simple tactics in terms of creating diamonds, triangles, trying to engage, entice the opposition onto us, trying to isolate players in certain attacking areas of the pitch. So hopefully that's given you or given listeners an example of how we apply that at Arsenal. Now, obviously, if you've only got the children for an hour in a small sports hall, that's going to be really difficult. But I still think you can keep that element of, we're going to work in twos and threes for the first 10 minutes. Then we're going to work in 5v5s and we might finish with a 7v7 game. That would be one example.
If you include smaller format games in your sessions, then check out Bazooka Goals, Air Pitch and 3v3 UK to support the development of you and your players.
The one thing that nobody could throw at you is you haven't got a plan and you haven't thought deeply about, and I think it comes back to your comment about understanding, teaching and learning, in that you are putting certain things in place and then just testing them out in different contexts. So I, when I look at young players, some of the conversations I have with them is, in this situation, is the solution an individual one? So is it to change this situation or to provide a solution to the position that we're in? Is it something that you have to do individually? Or is it a solution that you and a teammate or you and two or three others can come up with to provide the solution? And I think you are slowly building the game up from that individual to impact and to have a ripple effect on the teammates around you. So I think it's a really nice way to begin to serve up the complexity of the game to young children. And I mean, you mentioned ecological dynamics earlier. It sounds a really complex thing, but the ecological bit is just about the environment. And the dynamics means that it's constantly changing. And so if you put those things together, what we're trying to do is help children survive in an environment that is constantly changing. And if we can do that, with all of the things that the opportunities that we're giving them during the week and over the years and that they're with us, I think we're doing a great job. And then the children, the youth, the players, the adults, they generally find their own level. But what we've tried to do is unpick and serve up the complexity of the game in the most appropriate way for the age and stage of development that they're at. So I think you explained it really clearly, Lewis.
And just on that, in terms of research, and if any listeners are interested in terms of gaining more knowledge and research, I would really recommend a German researcher, Daniel Mehmet. He's done a lot of research in terms of tactical creativity. I think he researched a paper that's actually a book now, which is Teaching Tactical Creativity in Sport, Practice and Research. I don't know if you've read this, Pete. I'm sure that you've come across Daniel Mehmet's work. But for me, that was a really great bit of research that really helped me in terms of the what and the how. And if we talk about individual creativity, there were some really sort of amazing sort of resources and knowledge that really have helped me in this to apply this in terms of focus of attention and diversification of football experiences, and really, really some really good research.
Thank you for dropping that in there, because I think we can talk about how important it is to have variety and a really varied programme. But then I think it's really useful for then us to talk about, how do you do that? What can you be reading? Who can you be looking into? Where can you be getting your influences from hopefully good, reputable and equally passionate sources to help you do that? It's all well and good, I think, saying, oh, well, we just need to have this in place. Okay, so how do you put that in place?
Yeah.
How does that come about? So I think it's really great for our listeners, coaches and parents and anyone interested in the teaching and the nurturing and the coaching of young children to hear from people like yourself, Lewis, who your influences have been and books and things that you've read and articles, because it just helps build a bigger picture for other people's personal development. So I think that's really great. And it sounds like it was so great to have a really broken down weekly look at what you're doing at Arsenal and how that plays out in the week for the kids and how variety can be balanced, because you are lucky enough to have these kids for slightly longer. I don't know, a question for the two of you then, for more grassroots coaches who may only get to be working with these kids on a more weekly basis or possibly even less, do either of you have any advice towards the balance when you are working on a more weekly basis and your access and your connection with these kids possibly might just be an hour a week? Is there any advice that you might offer these coaches as to how to approach that balance, you know, when you've got less time?
I think, and Pete will probably do a better job than me, and especially with the work that you're doing with the play phase, Pete, I've always looked at it as this. It's a spectrum in terms of, so I always look at it in terms of the methodology that we've put together at Arsenal is provide a lot of play, but maybe a little bit of practice. And I think that's quite a good summary in terms of, depending on how long you've got the children, are you ensuring that you're providing a lot of purposeful play or deliberate play, so games, but it's okay to provide a little bit of practice now and again. And I think unopposed or technical work, it's not a dirty word, and it's not something that they shouldn't do, but it's just provide a little bit of that. And when do you do that? And that depends on the children that you've got and their capabilities, doesn't it? But I don't know, Pete.
Yeah, I think if I was a grassroots coach and I had my players for an hour a week, how I use that hour is really important. And it's whether I look at the performance or the result at the weekend, and that dictates everything that I do in that hour, or whether I adopt Lewis's approach, where they are young children at a particular stage in their development. So we need to work on their physical literacy. We need to work on their individual relationship with the ball and with each other. I think if we concentrate on those things, then the result and the performance at the weekend will tend to take care of itself. But I think we can sometimes hijack all of that development that needs to go on because we think the result at the weekend is important. So I would rather have that kind of balance. But I think that using the words like play and practice should all be, particularly around blocked practice or constant practice, where it's seen as a lot of repetitions with very little decision making. That's not the enemy. The enemy is coaches who are giving players that kind of experience where they actually need the next bit. And I saw so many examples a while back now. I think it's completely changed, where coaches were doing practice activities with very low decision making or no decision making at all, thinking that it was the best preparation for an invasion game. And we now know that it's not. But it's not the enemy, because if some particularly young children need that kind of repetitive practice, then that's what they need at that particular time. The enemy is keeping them there when they actually now need to get into the next bits of the game. So I think if we can enlighten coaches in that respect and get them to thinking about that, I think we're going to be in a better place anyway.
Thank you both for both of your answers there. So from my experience of grassroots, obviously, I never played football, but my brother did. We'd go to matches every Sunday. And I was always, I suppose, as a kid myself, slightly overwhelmed at sometimes how vocal parents could be. And everything that you've just said then feels like that's a really useful thing for parents to know is happening and what your approach is and why you've chosen this specific approach. Again, to have a more holistic view on the child. And obviously when we can't take the child and then ignore all of their other relationships, what is going on in their school life, what is going on in their home life with their friends in the grassroots session or outside of the grassroots session, that I think from other conversations that we've had with other coaches like yourself, Lewis, and with other specialists working with children, it feels like we're always hopefully bringing back the importance of the more that everybody knows what's going on, the more everybody can be on board or question or go, oh, why is this happening? And the more inquisitive everybody can be and the more open that everybody can be, the more beneficial this process or your line of work mm-hmm. will become, and everybody will reap the benefits. Have you both found that as coaches that there has been success in involving? I know we talked about managing relationships with parents or caregivers slightly earlier on in the episode. Is this a conversation that you've either had with parents or one that you, if you were a grassroots coach, would consider having with them?
I know I certainly did, because I think I've seen two real methods of dealing with parents. You either push them as far away as possible and do a bit of mushroom management where you keep them in the dark and you don't tell them anything, or you can bring them in and make them part of a really vibrant development environment. So I would always bring the parents closer than push them away, because we are, in effect, looking after on a regular basis their most precious possession. So. Yeah. Why wouldn't we include them in this? Is the methodology, this is the reasoning why. Lewis has already mentioned this is the research that backs it up. This mm-hmm. is really great for young children, but also if they're in a sporting context, it's great for them there. So we actually take them on the journey with us rather than leave them behind at the bus stop while the bus disappears over the hill, you know.
And hopefully there's less resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's changing perceptions, and I think we quite often use the word, oh, we've got to deal with parents, or oh, I'm managing parents again. But I've tried to change that perception in terms of we're actually working with parents. And I think when you change that that wording, I think that helps, because like you said, Pete, we're working with, you know, we should never forget that 2 hours that we're working with somebody's child, you know, or people's children. So yeah, I think, and that's something that I personally feel that we need to continue to improve. I think we communicate well as an academy in terms of our vision and our mission and the pillars and all of the other bits that surround the academy. But I still think there needs to be a bit more communication, especially the more that parents know about skill acquisition, I think will help them, because especially some of our parents that have come from a grassroots environment that may be more sort of top-down coach controlling. And again, I'm not generalising. I'm just saying from my experiences. So I don't want people to think that I'm generalising that all grassroots coaches are like that, because they're certainly not. But, you know, they come from that environment where they expect to see coaches controlling and explicitly telling children what to do. You know, that can be perceived as good coaching. Whereas actually, if we've done the research and the research is telling us that, you know what, to create skillful, creative, adaptable players, they need to make decisions themselves, and they also need to make mistakes to go from incompetent to competent. So we're not going to coach them on the ball. But you know what, we will motivate them off the ball, and we might coach one or two players. If we're attacking the goal, we might coach one or two of the defenders, and we might coach them to be ready for a counter-attack. Or if we're defending the goal, we might coach the attackers to be ready for the counter-attack. So again, I think, and that's something as my role as lead phase is to improve on, is to really work with parents, engage with parents, and make them aware of all this amazing research and explain the why. And I think that will help manage their expectations as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So is there any other advice that you would offer to anyone who is involved with foundation phase players that has been useful for you or that you would like to pass on?
So coaches, Lauren, or just in general?
Any advice for coaches who are working with foundation phase players?
Okay, I'm going to give a couple of just practical advice. I think when coaching, a quote that's always stayed with me on my Advanced Youth Award was, and Pete will remember this, and I think it was Steve Holland. So quote, do let me know if the quote's not correct or from the correct person. Steve Holland done an article in the Boot Room, and I think the quote was, don't steer too far away from the game. So that quote's always stayed with me when I've been coaching, and it's always been in the back of my head when I'm watching or designing training sessions. So any coaches that are working with children, you know, try not to steer too far away from the game. Ask yourself, does it look like football? Ask yourself, if I wasn't here as a coach, would the children be doing this? So if four children are in a park, more often than not, they would get a ball and play 2v2, wouldn't they? Let's be honest. So that's a bit of advice in terms of coaching. In terms of match day, I think this is a really important one for any coaches that are coaching on match day, is especially if you're working with children in the foundation phase, you have to have a high tolerance of mistakes, of children making mistakes. And it might sound a bit flippant, if you can't tolerate children making mistakes, then you shouldn't be working in foundation phase football, because mistakes happen more often than not, especially in foundation phase games. So as a coach, becoming aware of not coaching every mistake, because if you are, you'll just be constantly coaching mistakes. So instead, look at mistakes. If it happens once or twice, then it's probably, if it happens once, it's an incident. If it happens once or twice, it's probably a coincidence. But if the incompetence happens three or four times, then it's a behavior, then it's a pattern of incompetence. That's your moment then as a coach to go in and maybe intervene and maybe say, you know what? We lost the ball a couple of times when we were trying to build up from the goalkeeper, didn't we? Yeah. What was going on there? What do we need to do? Is it our positioning? Do we need to maybe play a little bit longer? Do we need to support the goalkeeper on the ball? And I think that's one thing that I've learned as a coach, is just zooming out and look for patterns of incompetency, not incidents or coincidence, because you drive yourself mad. And I still see that quite a lot from coaching in academy football, by the way. I'm not generalising for grassroots coaching. So that would be one bit of advice. And please feel free to step in, Pete.
No, what you've just described, I would say, is it a one-off? Is it a habit? Is it a trend? Is it a habit? And if we let it get to the habit bit, it's actually quite difficult to change that behavior, or it's going to take a little bit longer. So if it's a one-off, I would ignore it. If it begins to happen a little bit more often, it becomes a trend that in this situation, the player's normal response is this, I would be looking to intervene at some point before it got to a habit, which is a little bit more difficult to break. But I think you're right. We can watch and observe a foundation phase game, but we coach, or we mustn't coach as though we were a Premier League manager.
100%.
And because they're two completely different events, which sounds obvious, but if we understand what foundation phase players are capable of doing, that's the benchmark that we use to judge how they play the game. And instead of imposing some completely arbitrary standards on the game, and we spoil the game for the kids. So I think you've raised two really important points. And while we're talking about the games particularly, tell me a little bit more about this notion of volume and variety, particularly within the games program. What would that look like for you and for the boys at Arsenal?
Yeah, I think because the children are engaging early, or it's early engagement in football, isn't it? So we can dress it up how we like, but some of the children, rightly or wrongly, and that's a bigger discussion maybe for another podcast, but the children choose, or sometimes their parents choose for them, to engage early in football. Some of these children from 6 years old, and they're going to two or three clubs doing the pre-academy thing. So by the time they get to us at under nines, you know, they've engaged and they've accumulated lots of football. So I always see it as we have a duty, or we have a responsibility, that if the children are going to engage early in football, again, rightly or wrongly, then we have a responsibility to ensure that we provide a diversification of football experiences. And I think I've explained that in terms of our coaching methodology, in how it looks slightly different each evening. But I also think we then have to be creative in terms of the variety that our games program provides. So that can be a variety of not only formats, from 3v3 on a blow-up pitch to 5v5 futsal to 7v7 or even 9v9 or outnumbered or mixed age groups, but also as well, the variety of games that we provide for them, but just different experiences. So for example, we've introduced in the foundation phase Friday night football. So every Friday we just play a game now, and we invite a local team in, whether that's Stevenage, Watford, Leighton Orient, and they come in and we play a game. And it's under the lights. It's on a Friday evening where they've had a busy week at school. And instead of coming in and doing another session, which can become very mundane, they're coming in and they're playing football, you know. And I think the Premier League need to be congratulated, because I think they've done a great work in terms of really making the foundation phase games programme more age specific and providing lots of variety and volume in terms of games. So, yeah, the games programme is something that I'm excited to continue to evolve at Arsenal. I still think there's a lot more we can do, you know, introducing futsal as well. And I know you're a big advocate of futsal, Pete, and we've tried to expose the children to futsal tournaments abroad. I know I sent you some clips the other day of our boys playing futsal in France against Juventus and Barcelona. Just amazing experiences, because what keeps me awake at night, apart from my little daughter, bless her, but what else keeps me up at night is, does our program add value to the kids' childhood? So by being at Arsenal, are we adding value in terms of experiences and friendships, and developing not only the children, but the football, the player as well? Because I think we need to be careful in terms of academy football, that we don't take away from their childhood experiences. Instead, we add value, and actually by being at Arsenal is going to be really good, because it's going to add value to my childhood experience.
Yeah. And I think that's a really nice legacy that hopefully anyone working with children, regardless of age, not specific to foundation phase players and not specific to football, that if you're the capacity that you're working with these kids, if it enriches their life as a human being, and hopefully the experiences that you're able to facilitate for them and that you're able to offer for them are really beneficial and help them learn and grow and develop as adults, regardless of whether they go on to pursue football or another sport or any sort of physical activity, that their relationship with their body and their mind in terms of being physically active can be nurtured so it's a positive one, and that they can then move forward in whatever it is that they want to do, having had a really positive and valuable time with you as that coach, or you know, or whoever and whatever role you take, working in what capacity, working with these kids. And I think if everybody can get on board with that ethos and that goal, I think lots of exciting things will spring from that, I think, for everybody involved.
I'm actually really glad you mentioned that value added, Lewis, because the children cannot be seen as a commodity, that we get them in, and if they're great, they can stay with us. If they're not, you're out. I think, unfortunately, that's the system we're working within, but it doesn't have to be so hard-nosed and pressurized and professional as that, because we are dealing with children that we can actually shape what their outlook on being active and being sport for the rest of their lives is. We have a huge impact upon that. And we also have a huge impact upon their relationship with football. And I think if your program can add more value than it detracts from the probability that at some point you're going to be asked to leave the program, I think there are still so many good and positive memories that the children and their parents can take from that experience to outweigh the disappointment of actually not making it as far as you know, to that professional grade. And I think that is the bottom line. Our program should be built around those really important things.
That's a big responsibility though, Pete.
But it has changed, yeah. Lewis, because I remember in some of the darker days when it was get them in. If they're good enough, they can stay. If they're not, get them out.
Oh, no, 100%. We've evolved. We have evolved a lot. And I've seen ever since I started in Academy Football 2007, I think that was, which is a long time ago now, we have evolved. I still think we need to change some of the language that is used. I mean, even the elite player performance plan, you know, and the wording and the whole sort of thing of gaining contracts and, oh, it's a contract at the end of the season. So we are consciously, as an academy, trying to change the perception. And, you know, I think when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So I think that's our responsibility as a club to be at the forefront of that. And there's lots of stuff that we're doing in the background in terms of giving players a voice and the space. And there's some stuff that is in the pipeline, hopefully with UNICEF, that I can't reveal too much, but we are consciously trying to change the way that academies are viewed, because I think academies do get a bit of a bad rep. And I think some of it rightly so, if I'm being reflective. And I think some of it is deserved. But there are a small number of people out there that are really doing some really good work with these children. I think it needs to be recognised.
Yeah. And I think that if you were a parent with a son or even a daughter that was entering, you know, these elite pathways or these performance pathways, knowing that people like yourself are in charge of these programmes, it would fill me with a lot more positivity to know that you are doing due diligence on what are the best environments and what are the best opportunities for my child. I think that would fill me with a lot more, you know, pleasure and reassurance than possibly in the past. So, you know, it's great that we've had the chance to talk about that today.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Lewis. I'm just conscious of time slightly. I feel like this is a conversation that
I'm conscious of your dog in the background barking. He's obviously hungry.
Yes, I know. Yeah, for any listeners who heard, one was at the door and
he's some pedigree chum.
But Lewis, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure for me getting to talk to you for the first time and to have you on board for this podcast. It's been a really exciting venture that we're on, and it's really great for us to be able to share the voices of people who are working at really high end and really high quality work and high quality coaching. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. Firstly, thank you for the invite. I've been looking forward to this, actually. It's been good. Conversation and chat as always, Pete. I just want to thank, I'm going to embarrass you here, Pete. I just want to thank you personally, because you are, you've been a big influence on my journey as a coach, but also as a person. And we talk about, you know, being a role model, especially working with children, but being a role model for other coaches as well. So yeah, I just want to thank you, Pete. And also as well, good luck with your new venture. And we talk about, research and some more sort of practical stuff for foundation phase specific coaches. So I think this will be timely, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the content and listening to some of the content as well. It's going to be great.
Fabulous.
That's great. Thank you so much, Lewis.
Thanks again to our sponsors, Bazooka Goals, Air Pitch, and 3v3 UK. For helping us to create the perfect environment to develop happy, active, and skillful players.